Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, happy Friday, you guys. We're having a good time already. Jake Heaps is here. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers, producer. By the way, Curtis, great job on last night's post-night and pregame show for the Seattle Mariners. Quite the twist for you. I'm sure you were preparing mentally, emotionally to be talking about a really tough loss, and instead, Mariners rallied to beat the Rays 6-5. Oh, man, bottom of the ninth. What a moment.
Well, yeah, and then you got Justin Dunn getting hurt. It was an ominous start to the night, but thankfully in the ninth, Kyle Seager picking it up.
The Mariners looking for a walk-off win here in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the Fairbanks 0-1 pitch on the way to Kyle Seager. Swinging the ground ball, base into right field. The Mariners win it. Bowers will score. Kyle Seager with a pinch hit. RBI walk-off single here in the bottom of the ninth. And the Mariners come from behind and beat the Rays 6-5 to take the opening game of this four-game series. And Seager's getting mobbed out there in shallow right field.
Everyone's dad, Kyle Seager, just ahead of Father's Day, a week ahead of Father's Day, notches a single to win the game. He is mobbed at first base, rightfully so. And I was seeing a lot of discussion about it afterward about, well, here's the thing. Does a win like this matter if, and it's a fantastic win, a fun win, an exciting win, does a win like this matter if the stars of the night aren't the ones you were hoping will be the stars of the future? It wasn't Kyle Lewis notching that single to win the game. It wasn't Jared Kelnick doing it. J.P. Crawford's one of your stars of the future, but you didn't have a lot of those young guys out there doing it, right? It wasn't Logan Gilbert pitching like a no-hitter. It was Kyle Seager doing it. Your most experienced player, but someone you're not quite sure is going to be part of your future moving forward. Does it even matter? Because I was feeling great no matter what, but of course you're going to see people kind of wondering whether or not that's quite the feel-good moment it could be.
Well, obviously, it could be even better. I mean, Jared Kelnick was the one that was doing that. Fantastic. Or how about the person that Kyle Seager came in and pitch hit for? Taylor Trammell, right? I mean, if he's having that moment and doing that, you're feeling pretty good about it. You could go down the list of guys. Evan White, Kyle Lewis. Overall, as a rebuild, when you talk about individual performances in terms of guys that will be there that you're hoping are going to be there in terms of making this team a contender, were not a big part of that win last night, although you could point to the fact that Ty France hit a home run, hit an absolute bomb over there into left field. You had Luis Torrens, who's been better, hasn't been, you know, remarkably better, but he's been better since he's been called up, hit a bomb earlier in the game as well. But I think one of the things that, you know, stands out to me is that this team has great resolve. And you can focus on the individual performances all you want, and that's an important piece to it. But don't underestimate the importance of building a winning culture in the midst of a rebuild and how difficult that truly is. And that is one of the jobs that is tasked to Scott Servais, is to build that culture so that when these young guys come up and when they're a part of the system, that they know how, or they know the expectations, and that culture has been already set for them, and now they just have to come in, plug and play, and worry about doing their part in terms of helping their performance and their team. But overall, I think that to me is what stands out. And I think when you hear Scott Servais say this in cut number eight, this is what really stands out to me.
You know, great little rally we put together in the ninth inning. It's good at bats. Demo had a good at bat leading it off. Bowers, a big hit. None bigger than Shed Longs, and then was really supposed to be an off today for Kyle Seager. But you know, when you get to that point in the game and you got your one bullet to shoot, you might as well shoot it. And give Seags a ton of credit. You know, on an off day, you kind of shut down mentally and physically, but gave him a heads up. If there's two out, two on in the ninth, you know, we're probably going to need you to hit. And he stepped up, got the big hit for us there. So a great team win against a very, very good team.
So, Stacey, although I would love to see Taylor Trammell in that situation be the one that Scott Servais is counting on, relying on, and there's an argument to say that getting him that experience and that opportunity is important, there's also another side of it that you have to look at and say, also the wins matter. And your Skip making the decisions going for that and using Kyle Seager in that moment creates and sparks a positive moment within your organization, within your locker room, within the culture that you are trying to set and build. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter who's a part of that run when you have special moments like that last night. So much fun to watch. Enjoyed every second of it.
Well, and, you know, if you're kind of making the other argument, maybe it's a even better thing that Kyle Seager is the one that does it, not just for him personally and what he's meant to the organization, but you're leaning on a handful of tested guys.
Yes.
Right? You're leaning on a handful of guys that are even older than like 28, much less 30. You have an exceptionally young clubhouse, I believe just the second youngest team in MLB. To have a guy like Kyle Seager come up and do that, he doesn't need any more credit added to his name for guys to look to him. But that's a moment that when you're a younger guy, you might talk to him about how'd that feel or what's his preparation in that moment, what's his attitude in that moment. It's a chance to model all of that for guys that are making their first, maybe second trip up to the bigs.
No doubt. And that is incredibly valuable. And that's why, you know, as we are sitting here talking about Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager and Kendall Graveman and some of these other players that you're talking about at the trade deadline, at some point you need to put down your flag and you need to be able to not just continually be in flux, but have some established veterans on your team, on your roster to come up with moments like that, right? That's very, very important. And so when we talk about the future, I have a hard time and I'm trying to play to both sides of understanding that where the organization is trying to go, but then also looking at guys like Kyle Seager and just another reminder of how important guys like that are to this rebuild, to this process. And when everybody kind of writes off Kyle Seager of, they're going to move on from him next year. Mm-hmm. Well, what's your plan? What's your plan? What do you have a better version or a better placement of a veteran than a guy like Kyle Seager, who means a lot to this organization, has so much history? And I know that he hasn't been, lighting up in terms of his batting average, but in terms of home runs, in terms of RBI, he has been a difference maker for your team this year. And last night was just another example of that. So how can you confidently move on from a player like that when you don't have that same level of production or consistent production, reliable production of someone like Kyle Seager?
You're also not right now and probably not next year spending a ton of money elsewhere. You got a lot of young guys. You, for the most part, have kind of gotten maybe some budget team-friendly deals. So, you're spending the most on Kyle Seager, but you also haven't dropped a huge contract on any other guy, really, essentially. Unless you get something done with Mitch, which, certainly wouldn't be like a league leading at his position or anything by any means. So
no.
you're not worried about spending a ton of money if you feel like Seager really does add that veteran presence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he does.
He does. He for sure does. You're absolutely right about that. But one moment before Kyle Seager that has really stood out to me.
I've been meaning to get to this one.
Man, how about Shed Long and his game tying RBI double down in the count? And I want to talk about this just for a second after this cut, because Shed Long's been impressive.
Fairbanks assigned, the set delivers, swing and a line drive to left field, down the line for a base hit. Moore rounding third, being waved in. He's going to score around to third, diving into the bag. Bowers, the throw in by a Rosarena, cut off by the shortstop Walls. Long in at second base with an RBI double. Shed has tied it up at 5-5 here in the bottom of the ninth inning. Holy smokes, what a big base hit by Shed Long. His second hit of the night, and his second double ties it in the bottom of the ninth.
Huge moment, big time piece of hitting from Shed Long. I mean, you talk about defensive hitting there, down in the count, is able to drive the ball oppo and then be able to get the game tying RBI. Really impressive. And since he's been back, right? I mean, Shed Long hitting 258 in terms of his batting average. Done an excellent job getting on base. I mean, I think when you look at Shed Long, to me, he's a guy that I really had counted out in the equation. I still don't think that he's a part of the long-term future of the rebuilding process for them to be a contender. But Shed Long making the most of his opportunity coming back. And Curtis, I know that he is very much akin to your heart, being essentially his swag, his apparel, being a creative player. Oh, man.
Accessories are the ultimate measure of a player's success.
1,000%.
And Shed Long has every single one of them on, and you know he's going to be great. That's just
every
a fact.
Possible
it's science.
I don't mind it. But you know what? Well, I'm not joking. Some people might be joking. But Shed Long is on. He extends his hitting streak to 4 games, which is solid. He's only had, he got back on the 8th. I mean, 10 games essentially that he's played since his return. He racked up 4 hits against the Twins in that series and then extends that with 2 hits, 2-for-4 last night versus the Rays. Who knows what he's going to do, you know, in this game moving forward. But I think he's someone that, you know, fairly or not, people had kind of been speaking about, well, you know, what are the moves the Mariners make in the offseason? You need to be strong up the middle. You need a second baseman. I don't know what his future holds with the Mariners, but it's still really nice, and it has to be rewarding for that player to spend that much time coming back, just a grueling comeback and rehab from an injury to get back and have some of those moments.
No doubt. No doubt. And what would be an interesting conversation that we look at the end of the year, at the end of the year, is what utility guy? What are there going to be one or two couple utility guys that are currently on this roster that end up making it through in this process? Because I could argue that Shed Long is one of those candidates. Dylan Moore certainly is one of those candidates. And those guys are important to a roster like this when it comes to roster flexibility. So Shed Long, although, you know, whether he's the second baseman of the future or he's a utility player, these are opportunities to earn yourself a roster spot and to earn yourself and be front of mind when it comes to Scott Service and Jerry DePoto, and really happy for him making the most of his comeback.
All right, it's 11:13. You know what that means. It's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headlines.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
We mentioned it during the first segment there, but Justin Dunn had to exit last night's Mariners game after just 2 innings with that shoulder acting up again. What's the real headline?
Real headline. Turns out the real reason the Mariners are increasing attendance is to see if there are enough healthy arms in the city of Seattle. Badly in need of some assistance here. They have been so snake bitten, and we've talked about this before in a headline when we said it's the 2017 Mariners again, essentially. And I don't know how you fix this, how you can continue to change this. Dunn has missed some time before already with an injury. Hopefully that doesn't end up being too severe, but they've lost Paxton. They've lost Newsom. You know what I mean? Like, they can't get a break. Just got Marco back, and
they can't.
Outside of his first
Nick
outing
Margavich's?
Back. Yes, Margavich gone.
Yeah. Forgot about him.
Yeah, exactly. And Marco, outside of his first outing back, hasn't really been his old self still, and it's just, you're not getting any luck with your rotation, which you were hoping would be a strong suit for you, considering your lineup, so many parts of that would be so young, but man, it's been tough.
It's been tough. So you're telling me that they're bringing everybody back out so that that bullpen up there in the outfield is actually more of a tryout than anything else.
Yeah.
Right?
You get those active arms there. You got, you know, somebody showing up to the ballpark that can touch 85, 90.
With all the scouting and the controversy over stealing signs with all the technology, what if the Mariners have a hidden camera at that bullpen just watching, just seeing if there's somebody that comes out there, like the rookie, something like that? They go out there and throw 90, 95. I mean, that might get me show up to the ballpark.
Kid can dream.
Are you advocating for cheating?
No, I'm saying you got to scout. You got to find anyone that you humanly possibly can. And I'm just encouraging anybody out there that thinks that they could maybe step out on the mound.
Go try it out.
Jake, you're a former professional thrower of things.
Yes.
What's the fastest you've ever been clocked on a radar gun?
Ooh, in terms of throwing a football, 60 miles.
That's pretty fast.
62 miles per hour is the fastest that I've ever, at my peak, was the fastest I've ever gone.
Have you tried pitching?
Which is really good.
Or just
pitching,
to throw a baseball to see how fast you could do it?
No, I not tried pitching in my, you know, when I was playing professionally, football-wise. But the problem was that I threw it too much like a football when I was trying to pitch.
You didn't bring it back far.
So I didn't bring it down far enough. No, so that's why I played catcher, because it was really easy. It was the same throwing action trying to get guys out at second base than it was actually trying to drive it to the mound. So I couldn't get as much zip as you would think.
Curtis, you know what we need to do? We need to all go to T-Mobile, and we need to clock Jake. And we'll have a don't worry about command. Don't worry about aim in any way. Just throw it as hard as you can.
Okay. All right.
Headlines.
NBA playoffs. The Milwaukee Bucks storm back in their series against Brooklyn, forcing a game seven. What's the real headline?
James Harden hasn't spent this much time around so many Bucks since skipping Rockets training camp to drop a million at Dreams in Houston.
Oh.
You
got to kind of think about that one.
Yeah, I don't mind extending this series.
Google, don't Google Dreams, Houston.
I wouldn't.
Don't do it on a work computer.
I don't mind seeing this series extended. It seems like the Bucks had kind of control of it most of the time. It wasn't as good as I really enjoyed Clippers Jazz. But I don't mind seeing it get extended. And I kind of am. Am I rooting for the Nets here? I am.
You
I
have
am
to
doing
be.
That. You have to
you
do
made
it.
An early you proclamation that they were going to get to the NBA Finals.
Well, no, then I switched allegiances and was all in on the Suns. I had no loyalty whatsoever. So
I don't recognize it.
Okay, fine. Then let's go Nets. Let's do it. You got so much talent out there. Get KD.
Team Bucks, come on. Let's finish this off, because I made the prediction that James Harden would not get to the finals, and that he definitely would not win a finals. I don't think that Harden, I can't stand Harden. So I really, really, really don't want to see that happen. And hey, if anybody got their way, Reggie Miller.
Oh, he gets a game seven.
He got his game seven, and guess what? 104-89, some would say or theorize that maybe the Nets did throw in the towel in that game to push to game seven. Maybe they took Reggie Miller's advice.
That was no.
Maybe?
No. No.
Are you sure?
I refuse.
Are you sure?
I don't recognize that advice as being anything that was ever in the universe at one point. It was so bad.
Well, whoever wins this series is going to win the Eastern Conference, right? Because Atlanta and Philadelphia have been puking all over themselves in that series as well.
Yes.
Ooh, Philadelphia. Yes.
Yeah.
Oof. Next.
Headlines.
Pete Carroll, in his final press conference of minicamp, confirmed that Alden Smith is in town, but he's not practicing with the team right now. Ooh. But he does anticipate that he'll be at training camp. What's the real headline?
Yikes, no joke here. The real headline everyone is thinking, and I can tell you that right now, is that this better not be Quentin Dunbar 2.0. Oof, a guy with a ton of talent that you brought in to help you at a position where you really needed help, ended up not working out for a variety of struggles that started pretty early in the offseason. You hope that this isn't the case, Jake.
You really hope it isn't, and partly because I have continued to keep hearing from people that, oh, look, Alden Smith, this is a flyer. If he doesn't work out, it's no big deal. I mean, financially, they don't owe him anything. And although that is true, that is the wrong thought process here. You know what Alden Smith, that signing, was really about? That was their all-in chip right there. Hey, we signed Quentin. We were able to get Carlos Dunlap back. We were able to get Benson Mayoa. We went out and signed Kerry Hyder Jr., who we think had 10.5 sacks last year, can fit in really nice into our scheme, and can get us some elite-level production at that five-technique defensive end. And guess what? We are going to bring in Alden Smith, who we believe can be a major disruptor. We're going to have the most depth, the most pass-rushing depth that we have had since 2013. And Alden Smith is a big part of that equation. And to not have this work out, it is an opportunity cost for this organization. Maybe not a financial cost if it doesn't work out, but an opportunity cost. What do I mean by that? Well, there's some pretty good names out there still out in the open market that you are not trying to get because you decided to go with Alden Smith. Ryan Kerrigan ended up signing with the Eagles. He was still available at the time. Justin Houston's available. Melvin Ingram's available. There were some names when you made that decision that could definitely have an impact on your defensive line, on your pass rush, and you elected to go with this individual. He better work out.
Now, is it fair to assume that just Pete Carroll thinking he's not in shape enough or not conditioned enough to attend camp.
I've never heard of that before.
Never.
I've never heard of Ezekiel Ansah. If he wasn't in shape, he still showed up. They still made him work through it. They still had him in the rehabbing process. And that, to me,
Pete Carroll did say that he was at the facility working out.
Well, and that is good. Why didn't we ever see him? Like, why didn't he ever step out? I guess maybe they're protecting him to some degree, but it is concerning to me that he's in that spot. And I am hopeful that he will show up to training camp ready to go. He better not be Quentin Dunbar 2.0, where this guy shows up to training camp after dealing with a whole bunch of legal issues, and he is not anywhere near ready to go the way he needs to be, the way that this team needs him to be.
All right, we'll get back to this at 11:45. First, though, last night's Mariners rally was fun to watch, but there's one important decision Mike Salk wishes would have been different. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, guys, before I forget to do this, I've done it every single day. I'm so sorry. Well, first of all, happy early birthday to Jake Heaps, the very last day of your 20s. You are turning the big 3-0 tomorrow.
Yes.
It's going to be great. You're going to do just fine, and your knees won't change.
I can't wait. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I hear your 30s are the new 20s.
I'm telling you.
So I'm excited to jump on the other side of that threshold.
Everything is better about your life except for your joints.
Okay. All right. I'll have to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Also want to give a happy birthday shout out to my sister, Brittany. She is born a day ahead of me.
And an amazing baker.
Yeah.
No, that's my sister-in-law.
Oh, sister-in-law. Never mind. I'm sure Brittany's an amazing baker.
I take back what I said.
Sorry, Brittany.
I'm sure you're also a good baker.
Yeah, yes, I'm sure you're
but
great.
My sister,
mostly happy
she
birthday.
Is amazing. She was like a second mom to me growing up. She's 4 years older than me. But I was almost born on her birthday. She warned my mom, better not have this kid on my birthday. Ended up happening. So.
Yikes.
Yeah. So.
Tough stuff. Well, happy birthday to both of you then.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, Jake's about to turn 30. I've been telling him 30s are the new 20s. They're the best time. Do you have any advice for this new 30-year-old?
Jake, now that you're turning 30, you will become the next person. I will send you the link to my favorite article all about things that you need to do by the time you turn 30. It's about becoming an adult, and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
It's great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I sent it to Brady. I sent it to Kyle.
This
is a long-standing tradition. I think I sent it to Stacey.
Yep.
Weird. I just turned 30 a couple months ago. Didn't
Woo!
Get it.
I didn't realize.
Interesting.
Curtis, I will send it. You have a kid though, so you're on track. Here.
Okay.
I'll send it to both of you guys.
Well, okay. Well, I have 24 hours to get that done. So yeah, make sure you sent that over to me ASAP.
He's
got to
be ready. All right, Mike. You had something very interesting that you texted us earlier, and it kind of kicked off an initial debate that we were having about the Mariners rally. It was really fun to watch, but our question was: does it matter if the stars of the night weren't the ones you were hoping would be the stars of the future? I'm wondering if that's the mindset you had with that decision to pinch hit Seager in place of Trammell.
Yeah, that was what was kind of running through my head as I'm watching the game. And you know, I don't generally second guess a ton. I think Scott's a pretty good tactical manager in general. I generally like the sack bunt with first and second, nobody out. Didn't love it last night, A, because I thought Terence the hot hitter, and B, just had two walk. Like the pitcher was kind of off his game. And then C, that's just a terrible bunt. I mean, I know that I can't lay down a bunt in a major league game, but I think I can. Does that make any sense? Like, it's the one thing in baseball I feel like if I was called upon to do, I might have a shot at doing it. When you see the pop-up like that, it just drives me crazy. But, okay, it all kind of works out. Big hit for Shed Long. And, all right, Trammell's got a chance to be a hero in a fairly easy way. He doesn't need to come up with a hit. All he needs to do is hit a fly ball, and it's a great opportunity for a potential part of your future core to deliver in a big spot, be the hero, have everybody, you know, jump all over him. And instead you get Kyle Seager. Absolutely 100% the best way to win that game was to have Kyle Seager pinch hit there for Trammell. It worked. It was likely to work. It's the right tactical move. Is it the best thing, though, for the development of this team? And I don't know whether the answer to that is yes or no. I mean, I think that's why managers get paid. Maybe the fear is Trammell doesn't deliver and then he actually regresses. Maybe the belief is, yeah, you've lost yesterday. You're trying to get back to 500. And in the long run, there's more value in winning the game than in having Trammell be the hero. But I just found myself thinking that you had already tied it up. You've got a chance to let your kid be the guy who does it. A little surprised anyway that's not what happened.
Well, I hear you. I definitely do. There's also an element that you have to balance out as well, and it speaks to both sides of the rebuild, is one, the individual success and giving guys opportunity, and on the other is how important it is to develop a winning culture and amongst the rebuilding process. And I think that yesterday or last night was a sign of that as well, is holding true and holding firm to building that winning culture and how impactful that can be.
Yeah, and if that's the direction you're intending to go now, I absolutely understand it. Hey, the time for development is over. We've got to be about accountability and winning and all of that. Okay, fine. But, you know, we sat here, the three of us yesterday, and talked about reading the tea leaves of DePoto's comments on the air with us yesterday. And it sounded like the odds are they are more likely to trade Mitch Haniger than to extend him. That doesn't sound like a team where winning right now is more important than building for the long term. So there's some mixed messages here. And I think that makes sense. There are going to be mixed messages. This isn't consistent one thing all the time. So I really don't mean this as criticism of the way they did it last night, but I'd sure love to know more about what the thinking is in order to understand how they're trying to balance the need to win and build winning culture, as you just said, with the need to get a kid like Trammell an opportunity to help his development by putting him up in a big spot like that.
This is more of a broader question, but just genuinely curious. Where do you think they are in their rebuild right now? Because I think everyone's assumed, look, maybe because of COVID, maybe because they didn't hit, you know, as quickly on every prospect or because of injuries, that's clearly been postponed just a little bit, pushed back just a little. But, I mean, where are you kind of looking at it right now in terms of, are there nerves about being able to get this done or be a contender in the next year or so, 2 years?
Sure. I mean, there have to be some. I mean, you know, we've kind of talked through this. You've got Sheffield, who's taken a step back, Dunn, who's been injured, right? You talked about Evan White, who's both taken a step back, injured, and now it appears like re-injured. Kyle Lewis is injured again. I mean, Kelnick went over 38, right? I mean, we're sort of looking at some pieces of the future that are part of the contention quotient, and they're not doing it right now. On the other hand, you've seen huge growth from J.P. Crawford and some other guys who've emerged. So, you know, I don't think they're, like all questions like this, there is no one simple answer. Has it gone perfectly? No, of course not. Has it been a disaster? Absolutely not. Are there still signs for encouragement? I believe so. I kind of put them in that, like, they're 40% through this. They've done the big dip. They've taken their lumps. They're starting to pull out of that. And now I put them sort of on the verge of getting ready to make that decision to truly go all in. But until you start spending the money in the off season to bring in the kind of players that have big names, big contracts, and deliver big numbers, you're not all the way in yet.
40% through this doesn't feel good, though, considering it's 2021, and we thought this is when they could push to being a wild card.
I guess I don't mean in terms of time, Stacey. That's my bad. I don't mean in terms of 40% of the time completed. I just think of 40 as being like you're almost on the precipice of the time where you really hit the gas, if that makes sense.
Well,
you're in third gear. I don't know what the right analogy is, but that moment of like you're right on the precipice of getting ready to go.
Now, that makes sense to me. Salk, I wanted to flip this real quick to Seahawks here. Pete Carroll said Aldon Smith is in town, that he was working out at the facility, yet we never saw him. Are you concerned about this at all? Because I am, because I think this was a bigger move and decision than what people give it credit for.
Yes, he said he wasn't in shape to practice, right?
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
Why is this guy still around? I just don't get it. He's not in shape to practice. He's got a checkered past. More issues came out this offseason. I understand they're sticking by him while they get the rest of the information, and maybe that will clear him of some of the malice that it sounded like, but not the fight. I mean, the guy still got into an altercation, whether he was the instigator or not. I just don't get it. Am I concerned? Yeah, I don't really care whether Alden Smith plays for the Seahawks or not. In fact, I'm just as happy if he doesn't.
Yeah, I guess if you spend 60% of your cap on offense, you're going to have to take some shots and risks on defense to be able to bring in younger guys or guys with a lot of talent but a lot of question marks. You just the other part is it's got to pay off, right? Otherwise, you just got a bunch of guys out there that can't help you. All right, he is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Mike, have a good weekend. Happy early Father's Day from us. Hope you're able to enjoy it with the family.
Aww. Thanks. You guys, too. See you later.
Bye. All right, there's one mistake the Seahawks made last offseason they can't afford to repeat. Plus, I'm going to tell you how you can win $250 today. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Yusei Kikuchi and the Mariners take on the Rays in Game 2 of a four-game series tonight at T-Mobile Park. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. And you guys, we've got another chance for you to win a $250 Visa gift card. That's coming up in four down. Jake, you tried to scream into the mic. And,
yeah, I did.
You did not.
Well, that's how fired up it was. Okay. Didn't even need to be on the air
Didn't
to do
even
it.
Need to be on air. That chance for you to win a $250 Visa gift card coming up in four down territory, thanks to Genuine Auto Glass. We're going to have a code word and instructions for you to enter. So that's coming up at four down territory in 12:15. Before we get to any of that, Jake, there is a mistake the Seahawks cannot afford to make again this year. And I gotta admit, your answer to how important Alden Smith is going to be related to that, very interesting, because I didn't anticipate it would be that much of an impact, but you've got a good argument to make.
Yeah, I mean, when I hear this cut from Pete Carroll, it definitely raised some eyebrows for me.
He's in town, and he's been working out. Didn't feel like he was ready for this yet, but we'll see see how he handles himself through the summertime, the conditioning he gets into. But we're looking forward to him making it and getting out here. So I just felt it was best for him at this point to just work out on his own. And so he's been in the facility and out, but he's sending a good impression that he's made on us right now. He's working hard at it.
So he hasn't worked out in the building. He's been in and out of the building, working out on his own, away from the building, not practicing with the team. There are a lot of things about this that I don't like. I don't feel comfortable with. And Alden Smith can be an impactful player. He can be a really good, solid contributor for this team. I mean, last year for the Dallas Cowboys, he has a very, very solid season in his first year back after spending 4 years being suspended from the NFL. And so he had a nice comeback. But ultimately, I look at Alden Smith as this better not be Dunbar 2.0. And what I mean by that is dealing with a player that is going through legal issues in the offseason. And when they show up to training camp, they're out of shape and you're not able to capitalize on the reward of the talent of that player. We all know how the Quentin Dunbar experience went. I actually believe Quentin Dunbar is an extremely talented player. That's why I was excited initially. That's why everybody in town was excited initially about the trade. That's why John Schneider made the trade, because of the talent that Quentin Dunbar actually possesses. But when you're dealing with a player whose mind, heart, body, soul isn't necessarily dedicated to the game the way it needs to be because they're dealing with legal issues, that puts you in a really tough position. And Mike Salk earlier, a segment ago, saying I don't know why they still have him on the roster. I do, because he's talented, because he's extremely talented, and because he's a guy that if he can get his body right and he can get himself into a position where he can play and contribute to this team, it can be impactful. He could be arguably your most impactful defensive lineman out on the edge this season, next to Carlos Dunlap. That's him at his best, and that's what he displayed last year with the Dallas Cowboys. But my concern is that you're holding on to somebody when you had previous experience last year of you should cut bait now and go and take another risk on a guy like Justin Houston, who is extremely productive. He's older. Or a Melvin Ingram, guy with incredible upside, but he's coming off an injury. I would rather take chances on that than an Alden Smith, who isn't even showing up to, he's not even at camp. Like, he's not in shape enough? What's going on here?
Yeah, I guess the way that I interpreted it was, no matter what with Alden Smith, it was the highest ceiling you thought you had with your lowest risk financially. And like I said with Salk, when you invest almost 58% of your cap in offense, on defense, you're not going to be able to invest as much, particularly if you're spending money on Jamal Adams, if you're spending money on Bobby Wagner. That means that you're going to take flyers. It means you're going to take chances. It means that the reason you are getting someone cheaper is either they are a rookie, they need a second chance, or someone else has given up on them.
Yeah, very true. I mean, they're doing that with Robert. Yes, that's exactly how you say it. I always get tongue tied as I'm about to say his name. But he's another player that you're taking a flyer on as well, that maybe he could step up and maybe he could be the three technique defensive tackle that we've been talking about behind Puna Ford. But you're taking these flyers and these risks. And Alden Smith, yeah, sure, on paper, you've got Benson Mayo, you got Kerry Hyder Jr., you got Carlos Dunlap, Daryl Taylor. Don't forget about Alton Robinson. You've got names and you've got guys, you got depth there. But Alden Robinson was a signing that you're hoping brings a lot more impact than just being a rotational player. He can be a frontline guy for you, and they need that. This group is not good enough and dominant enough to just sit back and say, I think we're good here. Alden Smith, the promise of what he brings, makes you feel like you're actually competing within your division. And if he's not on your roster, it's not a cost to you financially, but I still think it's an opportunity cost, a wasted opportunity cost when it comes to signing other guys like a Ryan Kerrigan, who signed for next to nothing this year. You have guys like Justin Houston or Melvin Ingram that aren't going to be major price tags for your franchise. Maybe more than what you're willing to spend, but it's not astronomical.
Yeah, but I mean, every one of those, you know, $1, $2, $3 million makes a difference. Now, it ends up being pennies if you feel like that player makes a huge impact for you, especially when your defense can be elite, and if your offense, particularly your pass rush, your defensive line, can't get it together, it doesn't matter, right? We were just talking about Tennessee. We were just talking about the Titans offense, and we were going to talk about how Seahawks are facing them in week two. And I said, man, people
overlook in week one,
yep,
that could get
and
after
I said,
it.
People overlook the Titans defense because they think it's like old school and they're not as explosive. And the Titans scored more points per game than the Chiefs did last year. And you said, but their defense has been abysmal and inconsistent, and that's going to end up costing you. You don't want that to happen this year, because I keep talking about, oh, well, the Seahawks need to score more points per game. They need to be better on third down conversion. None of that's going to end up mattering if your defense falls apart. In the entire offseason conversation, whether it's because of the new OC, whether it's because of Russell Wilson's comments, has been about offense. That's the strength of the team. You got to be elite on that side of the ball if you want to get to a Super Bowl, considering that's where you've invested, considering that's where your greatest strengths are. You can't have the defense cost you one. And we haven't been talking about the defense a lot. I think there's plenty of reason for people to be excited. But I do agree with you. I'm not sure that I agree that like Alden Smith has to work out. But I agree with you that you have, the Seahawks, have taken chances on guys that do need to pay off collectively. Like,
yeah.
I can't think of one guy outside of maybe like a Carlos Dunlap, where there's a couple guys where if they don't
pay
off,
how about Kerry Hyder Jr.? You decided to pay him. He's coming off a 10.5 sack season. That's great. But you talk about erratic play. You talk about inconsistent play. I mean, my gosh, there's no guarantee that Kerry Hyder Jr. is going to be a 10.5 sack guy for you this year, an 8.5 sack guy. His career has been so up and down. It's crazy.
I think if there's one stat you don't want to see next year, it's Jamal Adams leading your team in sacks. He's capable of doing it. It will mean a phenomenal year for him. And that's great. But Jaron Reed said it last year. You would have hoped it would be a defensive lineman. And any defensive lineman is going to be like, that should be me.
Yeah.
That should be me leading the team.
Well, for sure it should be. And if Jamal Adams is leading your team in sacks, that means that you're having to overextend yourself in the amount of times that you're having to send Jamal Adams in on pressures to manufacture pressure. And I think that when you have a group, the way that they were able to play in the second half of the season last year as a defensive line group, they were getting it done together. There wasn't one standalone guy that was all of a sudden jumping, you know, off the charts, and he was the sack getter. It was a collective group. And that's why I like what they have done with their offseason additions. Just, I think people are underestimating how important that Aldon Smith signing was, what it could signify for this team. And hearing the news that Aldon Smith was not at mandatory minicamp because he wasn't in shape enough is definite cause for concern when we had that same experience last year like Quentin Dunbar.
Fair. All right. Seahawks pre and post game show host Michael Bumpus going to join us next. I need to ask him about some of these Seahawks wide receivers. That's coming your way in just a few minutes.